Welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, the latest on shares, markets and investments, now available on your Amazon Alexa.
Hello and welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, now also available on the UK Investor Magazine mobile app. For today's podcast, we're going to be discussing the globally significant titanium rutile asset in the Cassia project, which is controlled by Sovereign Metals. And to do that, we're kindly joined by Sapan Ghai, who is the Chief Commercial Officer of Sovereign Metals. Sapan, thank you much for being on the podcast today.
Thanks for having me, Jonathan.
So regular listeners to the podcast will be aware that we held the UK Investor Magazine Metals and Mining Conference a couple of weeks ago, and Sapan kindly presented then. So if you want a little bit more detail and see the slides for the latest investor presentation, that will be included in the notes to this podcast. So if you want to do some further research on Sovereign, do go and check that out. So Sapan, titanium rutile, this is something that, you know, some investors may have heard of, some investors may not have heard of titanium rutile. And indeed, you're controlling the Cassia project, which is the world's largest undeveloped titanium rutile project in the world. So before we get into the specifics of the project, Sapan, please you'll be able to give us, you know, a bit of background to rutile as well as Sovereign Metals, please.
Yeah, absolutely, Jonathan. So rutile, in its simplest terms, is basically the purest natural form of titanium that's found. Titanium comes from two titanium-bearing minerals, ilmenite and rutile, and their values determined by their titanium content. In fact, it's actually their titanium dioxide content. So you've got ilmenite, which I think many people will be familiar with, as there's a number of ilmenite producers, developers and explorers listed in London. And ilmenite's got around 40 to 60% titanium dioxide content and currently achieves a price of around $200 a ton. And then you've got rutile, which is 95% titanium dioxide and sells for almost seven times that at current prices, around just shy of $1,400 a ton. So in terms of rutile's uses, I mean, they're vast, and you'll come across it in everyday life without knowing. But essentially, you can split it up into three main categories. By far, the largest use for rutile is as a pigment. So that includes bringing whiteness or brightness or reflectiveness to paints, plastics, paper, certain coatings, even used in the pharmaceuticals and sunscreen industries, cosmetics. And that's about 60% of rutile's use. I think, you know, some people may remember that once upon a time, we used to use highly toxic white lead as a whitener in paints. And thankfully, that's no longer the case. And what's used instead is titanium dioxide, which comes from rutile or an upgraded form of ilmenite. Another 30% of rutile is used in the welding industry, where rutile is an important constituent of welding flux. And then the remainder is really in producing titanium metal itself, which is essential for aerospace, military applications, medical applications, obviously in the construction sector, because of its lightness and strength. It's getting a strong growth coming from high performance and clean tech industries as well. So you're finding titanium being used in electric vehicles as the casing for the lithium ion battery. You're finding it as a coating for the towers of wind turbines offshore, so that they don't corrode while they're out at sea. It's finding quite a few niches in itself. Titanium itself is designated a critical raw material by the EU and the US for this very reason. I mean, 70% of titanium currently comes out of Russia and China. And I think we have seen just how important it is with the recent conflict in Russia, spurring companies like Boeing and Rolls-Royce to look elsewhere for their titanium needs. So when you think rutile, I want you to think titanium dioxide and all its uses.
Fantastic, thank you. So Sovereign Metals has been on a fascinating journey. Originally listed on the ASX, came to the London market, the AIM market, late last year. But originally, Sapan, Sovereign Metals was designated as a graphite company. Now, this is, you know, alluding to, you know, where you started as a company and originally what you set out to explore and hope to find in the Cassia project and the immediate area around. But since then, as I said, you've been on quite a transformational journey where now the focus is rutile. Would you be able to give us, you know, a bit of background and a bit more detail on how that journey has progressed?
Yeah, sure. Look, you're right. We started off exploring for graphite in Malawi as a company around 10 years ago. Our CEO, Julian Stevens, has been out there for longer and was actually, in fact, one of the original vendors of the graphite assets that sit within Sovereign. So over those 10 years, Sovereign pegged some land in Malawi, a full exploration program with a number of drilling campaigns, and essentially uncovered a number of graphite deposits, the most advanced of which was the Malangundi graphite project, which some of the listeners may be familiar with. And we took that project through to a PFS by the end of 2018. And it's not a bad project on its own. I mean, the PFS at the time gave it an NPV of around $200 million. So quite a good coarse flake graphite project. But while we were doing the work at Malangundi, what some of the guys spotted was that we would bulk test the graphite ore and we kept finding rutile in the tailings, which is quite interesting for us. So look, over the last 3 years, that initial discovery of rutile in the tailings has helped us find and discover more rutile mineralization on our land package. It's helped us put a resource on what is now Cassia and get an initial scoping study out there, which we got out there at the end of last year. But I think what I want to say is, in terms of all the work that we've done, we've ensured that the titanium that we were finding in the tailings was in fact rutile and not ilmenite. Ilmenite is, you know, great to have if you have easy access to ports, but Malawi is a bit further inland than you know some of the beaches you find ilmenite on. But we had rutile, which is great. We did lab test work, both ourselves and independent, to find out that rutile is actually commercially viable. There's no nasties in it, so it can be taken by users who will use it in whatever production they want to, whatever use they want to make out of the rutile. And also, it tells us, you know, just exactly where all the rutile is, and we've found our land package is just teeming with this stuff. Our mineralized zone is around, you know, almost 130 square kilometers, and that's a pretty big piece of land. And our resource at Cassia is around almost 50 square kilometers of land, which in itself is pretty big. I mean, that's bigger than Zone 1 in London. So we're talking a huge discovery here.
So originally listed on ASX, as I mentioned previously, what was the thinking, Sapan, in having a listing in London?
Yeah, so when we started putting out news around the rutile and that we were doing more rutile exploration, which was, you know, towards the early stages of 2019, we started seeing a movement of our shares and a bit of a migration of those shares into the UK, into Germany, and even some North American investors who were, I guess, more aware of the potential of what we found, and also, I assume, have a greater propensity or risk propensity to look at earlier stage projects in Africa. And given that other mineral sands companies have captured the attention of investors here in here in the UK, we thought it would make sense to list on AIM. In fact, before we did that, we did a few roadshows with a number of investors here in the UK. I'm based here in London, and what we found was the same feedback kept cropping up, which was great story, would love to participate, would be great if you were listed in London. So we made those dreams come true for our investors.
So let's now, please, Sapan, have a look at the market. You obviously mentioned there that there's other players listed here in London, and I alluded to the fact at the beginning of the podcast that the Cassia project is the world's largest undeveloped rutile project. But would you be able to give us a bit of insight into what the overall market looks like and where sovereign metals would fit into that?
Sure. Look, so the market for rutile, I mean, if you look at the global titanium dioxide supply, it's around 8 million tons of titanium dioxide per year. But rutile only features as about 500,000 tons of that, so a very small proportion. So the question is, if rutile's so much higher content of titanium dioxide, why is it only 500,000 tons out of 8 million tons? And simply put, it just isn't enough rutile in the world. I mean, most rutile comes as a byproduct of other mineral sands mines, so ilmenite, zircon mines around the world. They'll have some proportion that is rutile, and that's where most of the rutile in the world is found. There's only one real rutile specific producer out there, and that's Sierra Rutile, which is owned by ASX listed Iluka Resources. Some of the listeners may remember that Sierra Rutile was also listed here on AIM back in the day, and it got bought out around 2016. And look, that operation is a large operation in Sierra Leone, and it's been producing since 1967. So it's very much a legacy rutile producer that's always there in the background. But Sierra Rutile plus one or two of the other projects in Africa where rutile comes as a byproduct really only feature as about 30% of global rutile supply. So look, it's a genuinely scarce commodity with no other large rutile dominant deposits having been discovered in the last 50 years or so. And rutile supply, it's been in deficit since 2017, where it was around 500,000 tons, and it's come down. It was around 0.7 million tons, and it's come down since then, with another kind of 500,000 tons likely to disappear by 2030 as current mines get older, as grades get lower. And at the same time, titanium dioxide demand is set to increase by almost 3 million tons. So you can see that there's a clear structural deficit. In terms of where Sovereign fits into that, well, our most recent study, which was the initial scoping study on Cassia, which only covers about 38% of our mineralized zone, said that we could potentially produce around 122,000 tons of rutile. So we're not talking about completely changing the market here. We would just fit into a market that continues to diminish.
So thank you, Sapan. Now we'll drill down more into the asset. You obviously gave an insight there into, you know, recent studies and, you know, sort of forecasted production there. But, you know, where are you in the life of the Cassia project? You know, how far away are you from production, for example? Are there further studies that investors should be keeping an eye out on? Could there be any potential changes to the resources that have been found there?
So look, we announced a resource at Cassia, which we used for the scoping study back in December 2021. And that resource basically was about half in the indicated category, about half in the inferred category. But on a totals basis, you're talking about 605 million tons of material at 1%, 0.98% rutile grade, so near enough, damn it, 1% rutile grade, giving us around 5.9 million tons of rutile in that area. And that was coincident with a graphite byproduct as well. So we had graphite there with total graphitic content of about 1.24%, which equates to about 7.5 million tons of graphite sitting there alongside the rutile. We used that resource to come up with an initial scoping study at the same time. And that initial scoping study basically told us that if we were to mine this part of the of our mineralized zone, so this resource, for 25 years, we could produce that 122,000 tons of rutile. We could also produce 80,000 tons of graphite alongside that. And that all gave us pretty strong economics, you know, a robust IRR of 36%, an NPV just shy of $0.9 billion, payback of 2.5 years on a total capital cost of $330 million. So we did all that work up until the end of last year. We then thought to ourselves, okay, well, we know what we can get if we mine this 38% of our mineralized zone. But how big is this zone? How much mineralization actually is there? And can we prove this resource up further? So we've been busy putting together our drilling campaigns, which featured, you know, which took place at the end of last year and into this year, and we're expecting those results from those that drilling campaign to come out imminently, and alongside that will all flow into a new resource for Cassia. And what I would expect is, or what we expect is, a substantial increase in those resource figures. And what that would feed into is an updated scoping study, which we're hoping to complete around the middle of this year.
Fantastic. Thank you, Sapan. So, Malawi, let's now move on. We've obviously discussed the asset there, but let's now look at the area that you're operating in. Malawi, I believe, is landlocked. I mean, what infrastructure do you have in place to facilitate production in the future, and what work needs to be done there, if any?
Yeah, you're right. It is landlocked, and we wouldn't be having this conversation was it not for the excellent infrastructure in place already in Malawi. About 10 years ago, the big miner Vale, alongside other operators and development banks, built what's now known as the Nacala Logistics Corridor. And what that essentially does for us, in a nutshell, is it connects our landholding. It actually runs through the project and connects us to one of Africa's deepest water ports and busiest water ports in Nacala, which is in Mozambique. We've already done a lot of work on how do we get our product out. In fact, we have an MOU in place with the rail operator. And what that MOU suggested is that transporting a ton of rutile, which I'll remind you is worth just shy of $1,400 today, could be loaded on a vessel at the port of Nacala coming direct from Cassia for just over $50 a ton. So not huge logistical issues at all, regardless of the fact that Malawi is landlocked. And then look, roads as well as rail, in terms of people, water, power, it's all there. It's all readily available. On the power front, we are, we're very keen to make this as sustainable a project as possible. So we are not only looking at feeding off Malawi's hydro-powered grid, but also as part of the scoping study, we looked at building an independent power provider to build a solar plant that would basically feed power to our project whenever the grid was down. And the provider there is someone who's been building, these solar plants around Malawi already. In fact, they built a 60 million watt plant, which is undergoing commissioning in Malawi. They've built another 20 megawatt plant, also. And Kasia is not that power hungry as a project. I mean, in terms of the scoping study, we'd be looking at only 14 megawatts of power required.
So that's a very interesting fact there, with the sustainability of mines. That's obviously a big subject at the moment. So it's good to hear that's being provided for through the solar plants there. So Sapan, a very compelling set of numbers you outlined previously. And of course, you mentioned there that there's ongoing studies and, you know, there could be further resource upgrades coming in 2022. But, you know, for investors that, you know, are going to go away and do some research on sovereign metals, you know, have a look at what you've been doing so far, have a little dig around the figures that you've outlined there. I mean, what can you outline for them now, looking forward this year, that they can expect to see from Sovereign Metals in terms of further updates and developments at the Cassia project?
Yeah, look, we'd be the first ones to admit that maybe over the last few years, we've been very busy on the ground in Malawi and not been keeping investors up to speed as much in terms of other initiatives, as well as what's going on in Malawi on the ground, what's going on with the project. But that's something that we've been trying to change over the past few months. In fact, I think if any listeners go to our website and see look at our announcements page, you'll see that we're almost putting out a one new announcement a week at the moment. So look, lots and lots to look forward to this year, aside from the fact of more drill results, which will feed into the resource. The resource will feed into the scoping study and everything around there over the first half of the year. We're also looking at revising a life cycle assessment of the carbon footprint of rutile. We had an independent environmental consultancy do a life cycle assessment of rutile versus using ilmenite to produce substitutes for rutile. And what we found was that obviously natural rutile in its form has a much lower carbon footprint than its substitutes, which are all upgraded using carbon and energy intensive ways and means. But what we're looking at now doing is saying, okay, well, if that rutile was to come from Kasia and it was mined in the way we expected in our scoping study, and it ended up in some kind of end use product, whether that be a pot of a tin of paint that you find in B&Q or something along those lines, well, what's the life cycle assessment of that? And really what I'm trying to get at is we're doing a lot of work to figure out whether our natural rutile is it is basically a solution to having low carbon titanium out there. So that's one piece of work we're doing. Obviously, once the scoping study's out, we'll be commencing on a pre-feasibility study. And look, continued exploration. This thing is open in so many directions. We still don't know the extent of it, so we're expecting lots more drilling to occur. And we also a few weeks ago announced our first rutile offtake MOU with a welding distributor, and that was for 25,000 tons of product coming from Kasia. And look, we expect more of those MOUs to be signed over the coming weeks and months.
Yes, that's a very interesting point you've made there, Sapan. And I'd encourage anyone to look on the UK Investor Magazine website for more details about the MOU there, because it gives a bit of insight there in terms of, because I believe, Sapan, if I'm correct, that was obviously the welding, the offtake for welding, which attracts a premium. I mean, just before we finish here, I mean, is there sort of any idea of where the your product will end up? Because of course, if it's all going to welding, that then it's attracting a premium, that's obviously very attractive for investors. I mean, how much sort of work has gone in so far in terms of lining up potential buyers?
Look, I can't understate the importance of this discovery to the titanium and titanium dioxide market. There hasn't been a rutile discovery of this size in the last 50 years, right? We've been getting rutile as a byproduct from all the ilmenite mines around the world. And as I've said before, that supply is just diminishing. So the market's ready to take this product and wants this product. So obviously I can't give you many details, but what I can say is the fact that we found what we believe could end up being the largest rutile deposit in the world means that anyone and everyone who is connected to the industry is, has been either keeping a close eye on us or has been giving us a call.
That sounds particularly interesting. And as I said at the beginning of the podcast, I would encourage people that want to know more, have a look at the notes of this podcast, because you'll be able to find the investor presentation as well as some links to some recent articles to give a little bit more detail on some of the points that Sapan has raised there. So, Sapan, thank you much for joining us on the podcast today.
Thanks, Jonathan.
So just to reiterate, some of those facts and figures, people want to look into this in further detail, do go to the video section on the UK Investor Magazine website, where you'll be able to see the latest presentation from Sovereign Metals at the UK Investor Magazine Metals and Mining Conference. Thank you very much for listening.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the UK Investor Magazine podcast. Please do share the podcast, and we really value any reviews and comments you leave us in your chosen podcast player. The views presented by the hosts and guests of the UK Investor Magazine podcast are in no way investment advice, and please remember, all investment involves risk.